Hey everybody, it's Talking Jake here, and I want to tell you about a new podcast and video series you're not going to want to miss. The Deal. Every week, A-Rod and Bloomberg reporter Jason Kelly speak with big-time athletes, entertainers, executives, Maria Sharapova, Strahan, Jeter, and more. The Deal takes you behind the scenes into those worlds of sports, media, and entertainment. From Bloomberg Podcasts and Bloomberg Originals, you can listen to The Deal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Friday, March 31st, 2023. This is another edition of Baseball Today, presented to you by our friends over at Blast Motion. I am Chris Rose. We got producer Dan along for the ride as well. And that is not Trevor Plouffe. That is the one and only Jolly Olive of Shea Station fame. And of course, does all our wonderful stuff with our baseball reference and everything else at John Boy Media. Happy second day of the baseball season, Jolly.
Yeah, technically second day. I'm one of the few and lucky that gets to watch their team play two consecutive days. You know, I always kind of hated the day off after opening day. I get why the players get it, but I'm feeling very lucky today.
Yes, I too get to watch my team, and perhaps mine will even score a run. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm not so Luis sure Castillo looked happen. Good. He looked good.
He sure did. He sure did. By the way, yeah, don't worry. Michelle's just getting something from the other room. It's we're on our vacation.
She's busy right now.
She is very busy. It's the back end of Brady's college trip that we're doing right
now. Oh, very nice.
That's what it is. Hey, quick question for everybody. You ready to dominate at the plate this season? Because Blast Baseball is the number one hitting improvement solution. It is trusted by more MLB, college, and travel ball teams than any other one out there. The Blast sensor actually attaches to the knob of the bat, and it provides real-time feedback with each and every swing. Metrics are automatically sent to smartphone apps, generating insights that allow you to analyze and improve your hitting like never before. And on top of that, not only do we want you to get better, we want you to save money as well. So head on over to blastmotion.com, enter the code word today at checkout. You're going to save $10. So unlock your potential with Blast. Also coming up later in the show, we've got our Blast Motion question of the week. That person is going to get a Blast Motion and a Baseball Today t-shirt as well. But let's start with one of the late night games from Thursday, where the A's came back in the late going to top the Halos 2-1. But according to the amazing Sarah Langs out there, great tweet, she said Shohei's outing was the 26th since 1901 with double digit strikeouts, no runs allowed on opening day. He is the first one to have his team, however, lose. Are we taking his performance for granted, and are the Angels as well?
You know, that's a really good question, Rosie, because I think that there's no way we can't take it for granted, because we've never seen anything like Shohei Ohtani before, really, at this kind of level. So even if we're appreciating him as much as we can, there's a chance we never see anything like him ever again. So we'll never be able to appreciate him enough. As for the Angels, you know, they spent money this offseason. They went out, they got some position players. They got Tyler Anderson. They got, you know, they spent on the bullpen last season. It's just, you know, one game in, we can overreact a little bit. It looks like it might not click again. But the Angels have 4 months ahead of them before they have to make probably the most important decision in franchise history.
Yeah, I don't need to get on that again. Earlier this week, I got a big shit burger handed to me in my social media inbox, if you will, about my take on Shohei Ohtani and everything else.
I like shit burger. That's good.
Thanks. I think just that in one of my favorite baseball movies in Major League. I think Lou Brown said, "Why don't
I thought I heard that before."
Shit burger. So there you go. No, listen, it's one game, but it's a game against the Oakland A's where you need to win it. Yeah. You know, you got your dude on the mound. He's the only one since 1901 to have the sort of performance he did, and your team freaking loses. Like, I almost feel like I have to prevent myself from asking these questions, because if I don't, then I'm going to get so frustrated with what has happened in Anaheim the last 5 years while he's been there that I won't be able to forgive myself.
I think that's fair. And I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do watching from the outside. I mean, I think we're all deep down rooting for the Angels a little bit. You know, a lot of people were high on them last year early in the season, but they got to go out there and do it.
That was a bummer.
It was a bummer.
It was a real bummer.
It was a big time bummer.
And by the way, he reached base twice.
Yeah, he had one of their like four hits, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It, It was a rough go, but we'll see. Maybe they'll end up winning winning the series out in Oakland, and we'll just move on as they go up to Seattle, and that'll get a true test.
There you go.
All right, biggest opening day story in the National League East. Was it that the Mets' pen showed out in the win over the Marlins? Was it that the Phillies blew a 5-run lead after taking it to Jacob deGrom, and then they took it on the chin in Arlington? Was it that the Braves won but lost their ace Max Fried for a little while with a hammy? Or that Justin Verlander ends up on the injured list before even making his Mets debut?
A lot of good ones there for sure. I'm not going to be biased and say the Mets bullpen, although they're worth talking about, I think. I think the Phillies game told us a lot about the defending National League champions. One, that even without some of the firepower in their offense, specifically in the middle of the lineup, they can still bang against the best pitchers in the league. And they really showed that against Jacob deGrom, who had his good stuff. You know, he had a fastball at 102. He had that 94 slider and it was moving well, but the Phillies were up to the task. They hit like 3 triples against them, I think. But that Phillies bullpen, you know, they got hot at the right time last year, but I think it's still going to be something we're talking about this year. And we saw it with the new addition, Gregory Soto, who wasn't able to get an out in that huge 9-run inning for the Rangers. So the Phillies are going to have to kind of teeter both sides of that with, you know, the firepower offense. They'll probably play better defense this year, I think. But yeah, the pitching in the bullpen, I think, is still going to be a bit of an issue.
And you know what? I loved the Soto deal for them. I really did, because I've watched him obviously a lot against Cleveland in recent years. And he's nasty from that side. You know, he's made the All-Star game before, but this is a new situation for him, right? I'm not going to say it's easier pitching when, hey, if you blow it, oh, well, it's another loss in a 90 loss season, as opposed to the pressure cooker of Philadelphia. Oh, yeah, you're defending National League champs and one of the toughest cities to play in terms of, you know, the fans being right on top of you and expecting something each and every day. Yeah. I do want to give your Mets team a little bit of love. You know, I thought the fact that Smith and Raley and then Robertson in his new role for this team, at least, you know, 3 combined innings, 6 strikeouts, 1 hit allowed. I get it. It's not against it's against an offensively challenged team, in my opinion. But you're asking guys maybe to assume roles in this team that they haven't done so in recent years in New York. Good. Check mark.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of the perfect litmus test for a first Mets win. What is the blueprint? What is the game plan without, you know, the head of the monster back there, Edwin Diaz? You know, I was saying to people in the office when we were watching the games yesterday, I forgot what it felt like to be nervous in the 9th inning, because Edwin Diaz was such a luxury for Mets fans last year that when you got to the 9th, it was basically like, all right, we won. Great. On to tomorrow. We don't have to worry about it. And with David Robertson, who was still is a great pitcher and was closing World Series games last year, I felt that anxiety and nervousness creep back in. He looked great. You know, Cooper roped one down the line foul, which scared me a little bit. But the Mets bullpen really showed out yesterday. Brooks Raley had a great outing, looked really good. Drew Smith had his stuff in the 7th inning. You didn't even need to use Adam Ottavino, who was great last year. So the Mets bullpen, you know, they built it well around Edwin Diaz. And even without him, I still think it could be efficient.
I have said that I think that they're going to pull the trigger on a trade. Don't you?
I think they're going to, too. The question is, who is it going to be? Because I think there's a lot of good options out there.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go sooner rather than later, like if things go a little bit sideways, let's say, they're going to get a guy from a crappy team, right? Kansas City, Pittsburgh, we've talked about their back-end guys
Bednar.
Before.
I would love it.
Yeah, I think Bednar actually would fit in perfectly in that city.
Alexis Diaz feels too on the nose. I don't know. Something about it doesn't sit right with me. I don't know.
I'll tell you why I don't like it. The fact that it's his brother. Like, that's...
Let him be his own guy. Don't try to make him Edwin.
Yeah, I think you're asking for trouble there. It just seems like this is not a Hollywood script.
Yep, I agree. Fully.
That's what I would say. Real quickly, Verlander said, by the way, if this was the playoffs, he would have been able to push through. Mm. And Fried, although we really don't know what he's dealing with that hamstring injury, it is something similar to what... Or he says it felt similar to what... landed him on the shelf for about 3 weeks in 2021. So we're going to keep our eye on those two things. We couldn't take our eyes off of Adley Rutschman in one of the crazier games on opening day, an Orioles 10-9 win up at Fenway Park. 5 knocks plus a walk on opening day. So he reached base 6 times. Is he already the best catcher in the American League?
Ooh, that's an interesting question, because the two catchers I would definitively still put above Adley are Will Smith and JT Realmuto, but they both play in the National League. You know, Yasmani Grandal was great in 21, had a really bad 2022, so I don't think we can put him up there.
No.
It's a conversation kind of worth having, although I do think we should see a little bit more from him before we sort of put him on that pedestal, but that's probably my proudest fantasy draft pick that I've had so far this year. Showed out 5 hits yesterday, a homer and 4 RBI. You know, I bought stock early. I took him with a high pick, but I was like, I think he's going to have a really good year. And I
what round did you get him in?
I got him in the 6th round, I want to say. 5th or 6th. Kind of snuck by a little bit.
Yeah, you get an offensive catcher in fantasy baseball. I don't play, but if you get it, it is important because there's so few of them. So the only guy that, in my opinion, is in the discussion, because unfortunately we have hit a lull as far as offensive catchers in this sport, is Salvi. And that's the only dude who, congratulations to him, just got named the 4th captain in Royals history, and it is well-deserved.
That's
when you're
great.
Talking about guys, somebody your age is not going to, I mean, you know the name George Brett. You never saw him play. Right. Frank White, a terrific second baseman in the 70s and 80s with that team and was there forever. And then Mike Sweeney as well, who was a very, very good first baseman.
Mike Sweeney was named captain. Forgot about that.
Yeah, so it's a great honor for him. It's well-deserved. Now, for me, the only reason I would be reluctant to catapult him ahead of Salvi at this point is catchers are a lot like offensive linemen. Mm. We as fans think we know what the hell they do back there, but we really don't know.
Right.
We have to go talk to everybody else associated with the club to find if a guy is any good. Like, we could see the metrics on sticking pitches and stealing strikes and blocking balls and all that sort of stuff. I want to know, can a guy navigate a pitching staff through those rough waters?
Right.
And there's nothing that we can watch during a game to realize what a catcher does.
Right. No, I totally get it. I mean, it was, you know, it was a testing game for Adley yesterday because the Baltimore pitching staff fell apart a little bit at the end, but I think he did his part back there. He had a lot of nice picks, a lot of good frames. And, you know, like the competition for the AL best catcher kind of thinned out when Sean Murphy got traded to Atlanta too. That's something I forgot to mention before. So it really could be Adley's spot to take this year, but you're right. Salvador Perez is definitely worth mentioning in the same breath. I mean, he was a home run king 2 years ago. That's not that long ago. And is still catching, you know, a decade deep into his career. So he's definitely worth mentioning as well. But Adley is going to be the real deal.
The thing I have always loved about Salvi is the number of games he puts behind the plate.
Right, right.
He just is an animal back
And
there.
I think like, Adley can give you that too.
Oh, I think so too. I don't think there's any question. And if you're into the metrics with him, only Realmuto had a higher WAR than his 5-2 last season.
Right.
He didn't play the whole season. Remember, he was banged up at the beginning games. And delayed his debut. For him to put up that sort of WAR in essentially three quarters of the season is pretty special. But he's a fantastic player and a great kid. We had him on the Rose rotation a season ago, and I remember writing the Orioles PR staff afterward, and I was like, you guys are so locked and loaded there for the next decade. He is an amazing kid.
Maybe really the Orioles should think about extending him, like your Guardians extended Andrés Giménez on a deal that I absolutely love. That could be a good idea, Baltimore.
And I'll tell you this, because Rutschman is not 21, he's in his mid-20s, played, you know, full complement at Oregon State and all that sort of stuff. He might be willing to listen to something like that. It's possible.
I think so.
Awesome.
Why don't you get him while he's going to be on the cheaper side? Because for all we know, he could be having MVP caliber years a couple years down the line.
Or sooner.
Maybe this year.
Let's stay in the American League East, if you don't mind. Bigger wow for you at the Boogie Down. Aaron Judge homering in his first at bat of the season, or Garrett Cole, 11 Ks over 6 shutty.
Rosie, that Aaron Judge home run in the first inning was maybe the most obvious home run of all time, I think. It might have been the most obvious home run of all time. The pop from the studio we had here was great. Everyone was screaming, losing their head. I'm going to go with Garrett Cole strikeouts for sure. Garrett Cole looked really, really good, especially considering that he walked the first batter on four pitches. And I was like, okay, what kind of day are we in for with Gerrit Cole against the Giants here? But he made that lineup look like mincemeat. He absolutely devoured that team over six innings. And I think we were in the third inning where he got the first out, and Joe's told me it was seven strikeouts. And I was like, what? It's the third inning. How does he have seven strikeouts? He had his best stuff for sure. I think he was kind of feeling the heat of opening day a little bit, which is good. But I will say that I will miss Gerrit Cole's long hair. I didn't like the short haircut. Didn't do it for me.
I know.
Didn't do it for
me. It almost was like he was attending a new school, and so he was looking for a new image or something. And I didn't quite get that at all.
A good way to make friends.
He was fantastic.
Great.
He was great. I thought both starting pitchers were really good. Obviously, Logan Webb actually had more strikeouts than Gerrit Cole in his work, but he made a couple of mistakes to Judge and to Glaber. You know, you said that it was the most obvious home run, which I would agree with you on terms of continuing and picking up where he left off from 2022, except that the guy he hit it against does not give up home runs. Webb only gave up 11 all of last season in about 192 innings. That is not a lot.
The thing is, Chris Rose, is that the MLB is scripted. So when Aaron Judge signed his large contract, they put it in the script that the first game he's going to home run his first at bat in front of Yankee Stadium. It's obvious.
Right. Against the team that he was actually had signed with for seven.
If you were writing a script, that's what you would write.
Right.
Exactly.
I loved, by the way, seeing the Arson Judge jersey yesterday. Did you catch that?
Oh, I caught it. It was basically the first thing we posted in the morning, which I thought was so funny.
Yeah. I loved that. I thought that was really good. But I would actually go with Aaron Judge as the answer, to be honest.
Wow. I'm surprised.
We were driving up to Cleveland from Columbus when it was happening. And I told Brady's sitting in the back seat. I was like, he's going deep. It's like, no, he's not, Dad. Bullshit. It's not happening. And sure enough, he hits a homer. And Michelle's like, how'd you do that?
So you can't say you were surprised if you called it.
No, it's true. But I think just based on everything that happened with him in the offseason, he had never hit an opening day home run. He's had good opening day numbers, but that was his first one. And remember, it took him like a full week plus last year to hit his first home run.
I wouldn't have guessed that he never hit an opening day home run.
Yeah. So I'm just such an Aaron Judge junkie. I really am a fan of his on so many levels, and I just thought it was really cool. Can I leave you with one little nugget, though?
Totally.
So Gerrit Cole set the Yankees' opening day record for strikeouts.
Mm.
He broke. I mean, you would never, if I gave Yankees fans a gazillion guesses, if they weren't listening to the broadcast closely yesterday, they would never have gotten it. It was Tim Leary in 1991. And so this is before the Yankees started to get on their run in the mid 90s. They were not a good team. So Tim Leary's name pops up. I look at Brady and he's like, what? Tim Leary? Now you're probably wondering, how does a 17-year-old know who Tim Leary is? Tim Leary is our pitching coach at Brady's high school.
Really? No way. Small world.
Yeah. Small world.
I believe he was a Mets draft pick, if I'm not mistaken, like a high Mets draft pick.
He was a first rounder, I think. Maybe he was a sandwich pick or comp pick or something. I gotta look it up now.
I'm curious. I don't think he was first overall. No, he was second overall. Second overall, though.
Was he?
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So now Brady gets to go back to practice next week and be like, I'm sorry you lost your record. But it was very, very fun. I love that sort of stuff about the sport.
That's awesome.
Okay, so we had pitch clock came into action yesterday for the first time when it counts, right? So Stroman got tagged for the first violation, I think. Devers got tagged for the first strikeout. There was an issue with your boy Pete Alonso.
Right.
Karinchak had massive problems last night and ended up giving up a 3-run homer to Ty France out in Seattle. Did it frustrate you at all with what happened yesterday, or is it simply, hey guys, you had spring to figure it out, now go figure it out?
I'll say two things here. One is that the only one that I really noticed and, you know, took offense to, I guess you could say, even though, you know, there's some Mets bias here, is the Pete Alonso one, just because I found it very confusing, because at first we thought it was Alonso's fault, and then McNeil was waiting for him to get to the back. So that one was a little, you know, ludicrous. And maybe it was because seven games were on at the same time, but I'm going to be honest with you. I missed most of the violations because they happened kind of quick and the game kept moving. You know, we caught a couple of them when we were watching one game specifically, but it never really deterred the viewing experience for me, which I think is an important part of it. And also you mentioned, you know, Karinchak had a lot of trouble with it. You know, a lot of guys didn't have any trouble with it, and they pitched six, seven innings yesterday, and it was fine. It was fluid. So I do think it's exactly what you said. You had a month to figure it out. Plenty of guys around you figured it out. You got to step up your game and get with the times a little bit. So I'm all for the pitch clock. I think it really helped move the games along yesterday, and there was action on every screen, which I loved.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I've been steadfast with that. And I've asked virtually every guy who has come on the Rose rotation since the start of spring training. I would say actually it's probably half and half where it sits. Like a guy like Vinny Pasquantino loves it. Okay. Loves it. Miguel Rojas was like, I hate it.
Is it more the guys that came up through the minor league system while it was getting implemented that are more into it?
You know what? I don't know. I'm going to talk to Trevor May today about it.
Interesting.
And he's a guy who obviously came up without it.
Right.
I do believe. I don't think they were using it at all. And when he might have had to dabble with it on a rehab assignment or something like that, or a couple of years into his career, he blew out Tommy John. So I'm going to have to find out where he was on all that.
Sure.
So here's what I would say. Like the Devers stuff, I felt bad for him because it was like a half second later he looked up to look at the pitcher. And Euclid had a major problem with it. He was like, the pitcher wasn't even ready. And, you know, we're going to get a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the way it goes. I am curious about the Alonso stuff. I heard Buck's comments afterward. And that is a little confusing. Like, if a guy's running, how long does he have? Does he have to sprint back to the base? It seems weird.
Yeah, I mean, just as much as the players are figuring it out, I think the umps are also still kind of getting accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, you have to be confident in your call and be assertive and, you know, back behind your call. And, you know, don't waver to the players who argue with you. But at the same time, everyone in the broadcast booth, everyone watching, the players on the field, we're all very confused by it. And you're going to have hiccups like that. But if it happens once in a slate of 30 teams playing in one day, you know, that's a pretty good number, I guess. You can take away, because if you remember the first day we had sticky stuff checks, that was a fiasco. It was a complete circus. There were tons of highlights of guys stripping and getting mad and taking off their belt and Sergio Romo's taking off his pants. Like that was a complete circus. This so much, we had a couple interesting highlights where it was like, oh, okay, that's kind of peculiar. I wonder what the reasoning was. And things moved along past it, which I think is a good sign.
I will say this. So late at night, I'm still begging for the Guardians to try and score a run, but it's a scoreless game. And Karinchak drives me nuts anyway. I mean, it makes me nervous just watching him get out there and throw the ball up in the air and grab the rosin and all that sort of shit. But in the game where we do have drama, in a 0-0 game, I did want it. I'm telling you this as a fan. I just wanted a little more.
Yeah.
Just a breath. Not for the competition's sake, but just as a fan, because it is fun. Like when there's two on and one out and how are we going to deal with this? Like that's the part of the game you do want it to slow down a little bit.
No, I get that. And that's the game you grew up watching and grew up covering, that paced play where, you know, you're kind of waiting with bated breath for every coming pitch. I think it's this is more good for the lulls of the game, you know, that we get to at certain points in the season. But at the same time, it's worth mentioning that it does deter from maybe, you know, the impact moments of a game where everything's moving very, very fast. But with a younger generation who likes things that move very, very fast, I think it's good for reaching that audience.
Yep. And I agree. I'm all for it. All right. We got two other quick things. Let's hit this first one quickly. Did you see what happened at Dodger Stadium with that dude who proposed?
You know, I did. It was.
I mean, okay. So do we feel badly for him? Because he got lit up. I mean, he takes a knee in left center field. Actually, I think it's David Peralta who is sitting there and like clapping his hands, and then three security dudes, including one dude who should be signed by the Rams or Chargers,
laid him out. Rosie.
Oh, and Peralta's like this, puts his hands on his head. So do we feel bad for the guy, or hey, listen, dude went on the field, you get what you deserve?
You know, I don't feel bad for the guy, but I will say I'd love to understand what kind of couple this is, because if the girl who he was proposing to loved this, then I guess it's the perfect kind of proposal, because that's just the kind of couple they are. But with that being said, man, you know, there's a million ways to do the proposal, even at the ballpark, to get the stadium involved, get yourself on the screen, all that. There were so many ways to do something that wasn't this that you can't really feel bad for him.
Well, I will say this, as not only the dad of John Boy Media, but a man who's been married to the love of my life for almost 26 years, it does get you ready for marriage, because there are plenty of times you are going to be blindsided and have the wind knocked out of you.
Rosie, so better be careful. Kind of she's the perfect... still back there.
He's not. She's in there watching. She's her voices, binge though. Watching Catfish right now. So this is what it's come down to. Me doing episodes of baseball today in either Madison, Bloomington, Columbus, or Cleveland, and
that's
her watching
love.
Catfish on a rainy day.
That's true.
With all that being said, it is time right now for our blast motion question of the week. We want to thank everybody who sent them in. As always, you're kicking ass out there. You're sending us great questions. It sucks that we can only pick one, but that's what we have to do. So, CODIS, congratulations. I didn't say POTUS, although it'd be great if the president sent in a question. That's perfectly fine. It's CODIS, K-O-T-U-S. You're going to get a blast motion sent your way and a Baseball Today t-shirt. Because your question is, you get to pick one pitcher and one batter from any point in baseball history to face off. Who do you pick, and what do you think the result would be?
Do you want me to go first, or you want to take this one away?
Please.
Okay. You said this to me before, which is good, but I honestly think I would have come up with the same answer if you asked me on the spot. And I get the prime versions of these players, right?
Sure.
All right, cool. I'm going to go with prime Sandy Koufax versus prime Ken Griffey Jr., a lefty-lefty matchup of all time. And I have to answer how I think it would end, which is tough, because who really knows how it would end. But I think Koufax would get the K. Maybe that's just me.
I love it, because you and I are thinking along such similar lines, except because we both went lefty-lefty, we flipped the generation of the hitter and the pitcher.
Love that.
The pitcher, I am going with Randy Johnson. And I am going against Ted Williams.
Oh, that's really good, too. But
so,
strikeout, right?
To me, there's no.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? No.
I don't know, man. If Ted Williams saw Williams... Randy Johnson fastball, I don't know, man.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not kidding. Randy Johnson's a scary human being, Rosie.
Absolutely. Ted Williams is a frightening human being standing in a batter's box. He would nail that thing off the wall.
Wow. That's the bold claim.
It is a great question, though. So thank you very much, CODIS. Congratulations on getting your blast motion and your Baseball Today swag as well. Holy smokes, did this time fly? I love it that we're back on opening day. We're not, what about this? What might happen here? Now we're dealing with cold, hard facts and stuff like that. What percentage of Mets games will you watch live this year, do you think?
I want to get above 90%, because that's what I hit last year. Things get busy sometimes. I like to go to games too, but hoping 90%.
That's great. Yeah, I'm a sicko. I would say I watch over 95% of Guardians games.
That is a sicko number.
I've said this to Plouffe and he agrees with me. I think I watch more live baseball than almost anybody at our media company. Just
Dan Rourke might have you beat. I think Dan Rourke watches 100% of Yankee games.
I know, but I'm just saying, just in general, like I'll watch anything.
Yeah, I think you might have
all encompassing. Did not miss a Yankee game last year, Dan Rourke.
There you go.
Good job. See?
There you go, Dan.
So, Jolly, you're the best. I think I appreciate you filling in as always. You do such a great job with everything that you touch at the network, at our media company. So keep up the great work, and believe me, here's the nice thing. Plouffe takes so many vacation days, you're going to be getting another.
I think I'm going to be getting a lot of work in this year with Plouffe going to Cabo and Hawaii.
You should put that in your an incentive clause.
Yeah, I'm the Baseball Today Sixth Man of the Year. I'm going to put that in too.
More than that. All right, for our one-of-a-kind producer, Dan Rourke, who never misses a Yankee game, and Jolly Olive, I am Chris Rose. We will see you Monday on Baseball Today.
Hey, everybody, it's Talking Jake here, and I want to tell you about a new podcast and video series you're not going to want to miss, The Deal. Every week, A-Rod and Bloomberg reporter Jason Kelly speak with big-time athletes, entertainers, executives, Maria Sharapova, Strahan, Jeter, and more. The Deal takes you behind the scenes into those worlds of sports, media, and entertainment. From Bloomberg Podcasts and Bloomberg Originals, you can listen to The Deal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.